You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Now, I know this has happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to you many times. You're sleeping, and all of a sudden, it's 3 a.m. in the morning, and you hear this annoying electronic chirp, you know, a little short electronic burst coming from some device in your room somewhere. You say, oh, yeah, my cell phone. It's telling me it needs to be recharged. Well, that happened to one scientist at MIT, and he didn't just complain about it. He got to thinking, what if instead of having to remember to plug in my cell phone every night, I could charge it wirelessly just by sitting in the same room as the power source? Well, that day may not be too far off, because some physicists and electrical engineers at MIT have just announced that they can light up a 60-watt light bulb from 7 feet away. And what's amazing about this? They don't use any wires. There are no wires connected to the bulb. They use magnets. How does that happen? Well, here to talk about it is Andre Kors, graduate student in the Department of Physics at MIT. He was part of that team that lit up the bulb, fulfilling a dream of transmitting power via thin air, made famous by Nikola Tesla, of course. And he's here to tell us how he did that. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Did I describe that little eureka moment?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it all started with, one of the professors in the group, Marin Soljacic. And that was exactly how it worked. You know, 4 years ago, there was a particular month where he would forget to charge his cell phone when he got home from work. And it was one of those old cell phones that even if you set it on silent, it would still beep if the battery needed to be recharged. So, you know, he was staring at it in his kitchen, very frustrated, the whole thing. And, he wondered to himself if it would be possible to just get the thing to recharge itself automatically. Mm-hmm. And so he was working on slightly different stuff at the time, more like photonics and optoelectronics. And he started playing with a few ideas, and over time it evolved and converged on what we currently have.
You know, I mentioned Tesla. He tried to talk about that, right? A 100 years ago. And transmitting electricity over the air through the airwaves. Were you motivated by him or his kind of research, and did you do the same kinds of ideas he had, or did you have to come up with something new?
Tesla did a lot of pioneering work on many things, and it's kind of hard to do research in electronics these days without bumping to something that he, you know, did some early work on. We were made aware of his work relatively late in our project, and he used resins, of course, we use resins as well. Essentially, what we do is that we operate in this so-called strong coupling regime.
Well, wait a minute. We have to talk about that.
Oh, Tesla.
We have to talk about resonance and how you do it to a lay audience. It's going to be, you know. Tell us what you do. What was the breakthrough, or what was the advance that you have done that no one has done before?
It's a fairly well-known concept in atomic physics and optoelectronics that if you have these self-resonating objects and they interact with each other, if you can get them to exchange energy between themselves, faster they dissipate energy because of resistive losses and a little bit of radiation, then you can actually get them to transfer power efficiently.
Well, I'm sitting here on the radio, and I have radio waves coming into my radio. Why can't I have that? The radio waves come in and power my radio.
They do a little. I mean, radio transmission is a sort of power transfer,
right,
albeit at very low levels. And it does employ resonance. That's how your receiver tunes to the radio station you want. The key is that not only do you need resonance, but you also need to adjust the properties of the system, say the geometrical properties, the materials, the frequency you're operating at. Mm-hmm. So that you're in this strong coupling regime.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the resonance first. You're saying that the transmitter of the power has to be in resonance with the receiver of the power. When you say resonance, is there an example in everyday life we can look at?
There's, for example, for a child that's playing on the swing, And if the child moves her legs too fast or too slow, then the swing is not going to go very fast. If she swings at just the right frequency, then it will go quite far.
Yeah, you have to kick right at that right point, or else you're not going to get up on the swing up in the air. And that's right. That means you two are in resonance. And you're saying that your device creates a transmitter of the power in resonance with a receiver, and you can transmit then the power efficiently.
Yes.
And do you have to create any kind of new device, invent any new technology for this?
We did play with several geometries. We didn't publish most of what we did. But there's several ways you can do it. And some of them are a little more creative than others, but none of them are very, exotic, let's say. You don't need any expensive materials or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And how far? You transmitted the power, what, about 6-7 feet to light up the light bulb?
Yeah, it was about 8 feet.
Eight feet. The more we talk about it, the longer it's going to get, I think. You foresee then that we could take your cell phone or your laptop and using this idea of being able to send electricity through the air, we wouldn't have to plug it in. We would just allow it, the fact that it was in the room with a charging device somewhere nearby would work. Would that be correct?
That's a possibility, yes. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done for that to be possible.
Mm-hmm.
Some work that needs to be done to assess whether this will have any application at all mm-hmm. outside the lab. Mm-hmm. We're cautiously optimistic. We think that probably the first applications will be in something a little more exotic. That won't be marketed to consumers first.
Usually the military gets these things first.
Military or maybe biomedical applications, sensors.
Mm-hmm. Now I know from reading lots of inventions and history and stuff that has to do with the great inventors, there's always some little something that happens. You mentioned that the motivation was there from that cell phone, but there's got to be something that some discovery usually has a moment where a light bulb goes up on your head and you say, look, the light bulb was working. I mean, tell us that night, that first time when you got it to actually work. What did you do?
Oh, yeah. So, that was, fairly early on, and we were trying to get the thing to work in the lab. And I was working with an undergraduate that we hired, Robert Moffat, who's a co-author of the latest paper. And so we were there on Saturday. We were having some little problems, nothing very serious, but it was 10 p.m., and I decided to call it a night. And Robert decided to stay there a little longer, and a few hours later, I get an email at 2 a.m., and he actually had a picture of a bulb lighting up from a few feet away. And everybody was very excited. And, I'd like to take the opportunity to commend Robert for his perseverance publicly.
1-800-989-8255. We have lots of techie people on this show, including yours truly. Let's see who else has got a question. Tom in Binghamton, New York. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi there.
I am a longtime power supply and magnetics engineer, and we were experimenting with some of that kind of technology probably 25 or 30 years ago for radar applications.
Mm-hmm.
Main reason I called in is I wanted to just express a cautionary note about the high-frequency magnetic fields involved here. You want to be careful regarding pacemakers and the proximity to such fields.
Okay. I always see those notices around microwave ovens in public.
Right.
I always say beware if you're wearing a pacemaker. The microwave is on.
Or even hearing aids.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to watch those sort of things. I'm personally not convinced that high-frequency magnetics is healthy for living tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the jury is out on that one yet.
Let me ask Andre, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I agree that, of course, safety issues come first, and that's something that we're analyzing very carefully.
Does this work at a high frequency or is a low frequency?
It works usually between 1-10 megahertz, and we've done some computations and some measurements, and We have good reason to believe that you can get these systems below safety standards from the IEEE, for example. Whether those safety standards are reliable or not, I cannot say. We're not experts in physiology, but I agree that more needs to be done. That's, of course, one of the hurdles that we need to overcome. Well, investigate more carefully.
I guess the key to what you've discovered is how to concentrate the energy from spreading around, because like radio waves, they would spread all over and dissipate the energy, and you have found a way to couple the two devices, right, so that there's an efficient and maybe, it doesn't go all over the place.
That's right. I mean, basically, each object is resonated, so you got these fields that are going in and out. And ordinarily, if you weren't in the strong coupling regime, because the intersection of the field of one object that goes through the other, right, which determines sort of the interaction strength, is so small, you wouldn't get efficient power transfer. But if we get the one object to excite the other in just the right way by operating the strong coupling regime, then you can actually get efficient power transfer.
Yeah. Ori in Louisville. Hi, Ori.
Hi. I'm wondering if this would be harmless to wildlife, if this could potentially be used to power, say, electric cars or something like that. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Great. That's an interesting two ideas. First, the wildlife question where we're talking about the biological effects you're not familiar with yet. But secondly, let's say you had electric cars, and as they're standing at a stoplight, maybe there's a coupling device there that gives them a little charge. Would that work?
It's possible, certainly, but that's further out in the future. We can do a few hundreds of watts with what we currently have, and it could be extended. But to power a car, you'd need higher levels of power, and also, I mean, there's more. There would be a lot of change in infrastructure involved, right? We have to tear up all these roads. So perhaps one day in the future, but right now we're focusing on other things.
Now, your research is funded in part by MIT's Institute for Soldier Nanotechnologies, which is funded by the U.S. Army, correct? Does that mean that soldiers are going to be using this method first, or the technology that you're working on first, do you think?
Well, it's possible. I mean, I'm sure that the Army will find some application for this. It's funded by the Institute for Soldier Nanotechnologies because one of the professors in our group, John Janopoulos, became director of the ISN 1 year ago. And so that part of his grant was used to fund this project.
Does this also mean that you're using nanotechnology in your devices?
Well, not actually. Not. I mean, we have some ideas along those lines, but not right now. I mean, that would make the device a lot more complicated and expensive.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell us about the trail you're on. What is your next step, and where do you eventually want to take this?
Well, right now we're working on improving the efficiency and the distances and, of course, reducing the size of the device coil so it can fit inside portable devices, for example. And
How big is the coil now?
Well, actually, they're both the same size because, just for simplicity, it was just a lab experiment. Mm-hmm. They're 12 inches in radius.
Right.
So they're kind of big. Right. And But we can make at least one of them smaller so it can fit inside devices. Mm-hmm. And we're also, of course, looking at safety regulations because, of course, lots of people are contacting us, asking about safety implications. So, of course, we need to analyze that very carefully.
Mm-hmm. And so you want to shrink down the size of the coils, both receiver and transmitter, so that they could sit on a desk next to each other?
Something along those lines.
Or would they just have to be in the same room together? Because, if you have to put it next to a device, you may as well plug it in.
Yeah, it's very true. No, I mean, yes, as you say, we'd like it to be very, we'd like to be as unobstrusive as possible.
Mm-hmm. And how soon do you think you'll have something for us all to take home with us?
Well, hopefully within a couple of years, if we don't run into any major obstacles, there will be some sort of application of this. Maybe not necessarily for consumers. I expect that something more specialized would get this technology first.
Mm. We're talking about electricity without wires this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. talking with Andre Kors, graduate student in physics at MIT. Folks pretty excited in your lab? You're getting a lot of attention?
Yes.
You're handling it well?
It's a little hard to actually, go to the lab and do actual research, but it's...
Too many people waiting for you, huh?
Yeah, it's a little different.
Is there...
Lots of emails.
Lots of... Oh. So it's good. It's better different. I'm assuming.
Yeah,
maybe I shouldn't make such assumptions. Is this what your line of work is going to be when you graduate, or when you get, when you get your degree? Is this what your PhD is going to be in?
It looks like it right now. Yeah. I'll just keep working on this, and we'll see where this leads. It's hard to predict. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there are spinoffs here? Do you think that there are other collaborations possible?
I suppose so, and we're definitely getting lots of interest, lots of people interested in collaborating with us in some way. Mm-hmm. We're still evaluating those, and mm-hmm. We're still sort of taking a step back and breathing a little and calming down before we think about how to proceed.
Are there energy efficiencies here? Can you argue on the energy efficiency side that this is a good product, good tact here?
Well, I did a computation that showed that if you were powering a laptop and the system were only 50% efficient, which is a very conservative estimate, we can get above that, then that would add about $10 to my electricity bill each year, and if I were running my laptop on wireless power all year long. And I was comparing that to batteries. I mean, I use my battery. I don't use it all the time, but I do use it quite a lot.
Right.
And I find that I need to change the battery every couple of years, and it costs me $100 every time I need to get a new one. It's annoying.
Yeah.
And
wasteful, and it's got all that mercury in it.
Yeah, exactly. It has toxic chemicals. Yeah. So maybe there's a case that it might actually be greener.
Yeah. Well, Andre, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Andre Kors, graduate student in physics at MIT in Cambridge, talking about Shades of Tesla, a new device that sends electricity over the air without wires. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to switch gears and talk about another hot topic, probably the hottest topic in science these days, technology, nanotechnology. So stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.